knows it come up, say four or five people, we've got the text here. I didn't want to get like 10 of them from there. It's going to be our opening song.
I can't sing very well.
With someone with a pitch, this is going to be our
opening song. What do you need song?
So who else do I want to?
Let's make sure.
So this is midlife spirituality, looking at our bodies, our stuff, and other households. And I thought we'd start with a hymn that is an absolute favorite of mine that I have frequently stolen from the Lutherans and used just about at every baptism I do. And it startles Episcopalians. This is really cool. Where did you get this? And I said, the ELW. And I say, well, it used to be the LBW. Oh, the LBW. So those of you who know it, hum along, and those of us with text, you get us. Let me tell you.
Gretchen.
All right, 1, 2, 3.
I was there to hear your morning cry. I'll be there when you are old. I rejoice the day you were baptized to see your life unfold. I was there when you were but a child with a faith to suit you well. In a blaze of light you wandered off to find where demons dwell. When you heard the wonder of the word, I was there to cheer you on. You were praised to raise the living Lord to whom you now belong. If you find someone to share your time and you join your hearts as one, I'll be there to make your verses rhyme from dusk till rising sun. In the middle ages of your life, not too old, no longer young, I'll be there to guide you through the night, complete what I've begun. When the evening gently closes in and you shut your weary eyes, I'll be there as I have always been with just one more surprise. I was there to hear your morning cry. I'll be there when you are old. I rejoice the day you were baptized to see your life unfold.
Who is the writer?
Thank you all.
Who's the author?
Thank you.
Thank you all.
Hello.
John Oblasocker.
Thank you. Welcome, all of you. I, in midlife, acquired a disability with regard to fluorescent lights. So I'm going to, they give me migraines. So I'm going to read you some of these quotes and then have Eric turn off the light that is right over my head. So it's going to mean that those of you in the front row are not going to see as well, but you can hear really, really well and just yell at me if I'm not loud enough. So our theme is our households and how they change. And part of the wider theme of this week is all the promises of God and how the very movement through the life cycle is an opportunity for God to give us more and more gifts of love, more and more love. And so one quote I showed you earlier in the week, but I put it up here. When the signs of age begin to mark my body, and still more when they touch my mind, when the ill that is to diminish me or carry me off strikes from without or is born within me, when the painful moment comes in which I suddenly awake to the fact that I am ill or growing old, in all those dark moments, O God, grant that I may understand that it is you who are painfully parting the fibers of my being in order to penetrate to the very marrow of my substance and bear me away within yourself. And then when we get to talking about our stuff, had the privilege of hearing Wendell Berry in person a few months ago, and he made reference to the tyranny of things we don't need. And from Michael Card, a musician, a song he wrote, "It's hard to imagine the freedom you will find from the things you leave behind." So you can turn off that light. I'll give you that. Before we go on, what is that? Do you find that hymn we sung as moving as I do?
I always cry.
Yeah. Oh, why does it make you cry?
I'm not sure, but it touches a very deep part in me, especially the last part.
Why?
Well, it makes me know that I'm going to go. And I'm not ready. I don't want to think about it.
Okay. You've got about 55 minutes. Others, do you find that hymn moving?
I think about that with my granddaughter. Because of confirmation and being baptized, and her mother is spiritual but does not take her to Sunday school and church, and the father's a scientist, okay? So they have that conflict, and I just worry about that. So I always want her to know I'll be there, and God will be there, and it makes me cry. In fact, I had it done in calligraphy for her as
a little baby shoe.
Yeah.
That wonderful image to kind of nurture.
So it's a totally different thing, and I never related it to myself until I walked in.
Wonderful. Thanks be to God.
Well,
that sense of the nurturing of someone in the faith that you'll be there and God will be there. Thank you. Yes.
Another thing that I've thought about, because I've heard this song so many, many, many times at baptisms, it's real common at funerals and so on. But if the words were just written and read, I have a feeling it wouldn't be as powerful for me. So it has to be the tune and the melody also with the words combined.
The melody sort of carries it, doesn't it? Mm-hmm. Well, let's get started. So how is it with our bodies at midlife, or what is going on here? I quoted for the kiosk out there a wonderful little quip from Isabel Allende, who I heard speak, and she's the one who said, "What devilish thing has happened to my body?" That is Isabel Allende, a marvelous novelist. So if you think of your body as your first household, in our earlier years, if we were blessed with good health, most of us didn't think about our bodies very much. It was pretty unconscious what we did. And another shift that we take at this time, and we will get to that at the end, is the shift in our relationship not just with our physical bodies, but with our material belongings, and that perhaps of our parents' households as well. That's another common and big shift, what we own and what, in a sense, owns us. So let's start with bodies first. So here's a bunch. You've probably known me enough this week to know that I love good quotes. Mm-hmm. So here's about four or five of them, and they're fun, but they're also insightful. Oliver Wendell Holmes, Jr., on his 90th birthday, saw a beautiful woman and remarked with a sigh, "Oh, to be 70 again." William James, the great philosopher, philosopher of religion, was asked if he believed in immortality, and he said, "Never strongly, but more so as I've grown older." And someone said, "Why is that?" And this is beautiful: "Because I'm just getting fit to live." Sort of youth is wasted on the young a little bit. Archibald MacLeish at 80, he said, "At 80, you have to begin to look ahead." And Douglas MacArthur, evaluating his life on his 75th. "Nobody grows old merely by living a number of years. People grow old by deserting their ideals. Years may wrinkle the skin, but to give up interest in life wrinkles the soul. In the central place of every heart, there is a recording chamber. So long as it receives messages of beauty, hope, cheer, and courage, so long are you young. When the wires are all down and your heart is covered with the snows of pessimism and the ice of cynicism, then and only then are you growing old." So just some things to sort of get us started. So how is it with you as you are noticing and have been noticing for whatever number of years the changes, small or large, in your body, some that may be gradual, and some that may be precipitous and cause an immediate change in your lifestyle? How is it that you're thinking about your own dying and what comes after? When we are younger, it's easy never to think about dying. It's pretty hard to avoid it at midlife, whatever year that is in your life that you define that. Our own body's shifts are happening. We may be observing and caring for aging or dying parents or mentors. We're seeing friends become ill or die. And it's very clear that we are past, in some sense, the midpoint or the halfway point of our life. And as we were talking about earlier in the week, it's a time that psychologists call liminality, where we're sort of not where we are, but we're not yet where we're going. We're at that threshold. And it is a time where we are adjusting to these changes and not yet clear at all what is ahead. We no longer have the unlimited energy that we might have had even a few years ago. We may start thinking about things like, well, we better do that backpack or that hike now, subtext, while we still can. We better do that trip now, subtext, while we still have the energy and the inclination to do that. We didn't think that way in our younger years. If we've been fortunate enough in early years to never be ill at all, whether we like it or not, if we have health insurance, which is a blessing, we are reminded with tests that we have to take at certain times, whether or not we want to take them, mammography and sigmoidoscopy and colonoscopy and prostate checks, and all of these things, for most of us, tend to do what to our anxiety level? It raises it right up. And if there was any red flag there that precipitated, oh, you got to have that test now, our anxiety level goes way, way up. And we're reminded then that we are very mortal. And then, of course, most of us have seen people that we know and perhaps love who may have the right body mass ratio and great blood pressure and great blood counts, and at 61 they have a stroke and they're gone. So we're very aware that even with the best of taking care of ourselves, we can see loved ones die suddenly. Other things that we begin to think about now that we have not thought about earlier, such as what kind of extraordinary measures might we want to keep us alive or not? How do we make that clear to others? We think perhaps more about what happens to us after we die and our loved ones. I had one of those wonderful Holden moments today. I was heading up to our chalet, and there were two beautiful little kids, Sophia and I think Joey.
Oh, yeah. Oh,
is it Joey or?
Toby.
Toby. And they said, will you stay with us and watch us? So I said, sure. And I said, where's your mom and your dad? My daddy said he'd be right back. And Sophia, the name, she looks right at me and said, where's your daddy? And I said, my daddy's in heaven with Jesus. Oh. And we played a few minutes longer, and she asked again, where's your daddy? And I said the same thing three times. I mean, I felt like Peter or something.
Yeah.
And I kept saying, he's in heaven with Jesus. And a few minutes later, I came down, 10 minutes later, and she was there, and I recognized her, and I introduced her. I said, which of these is your daddy? That's my daddy. And she said, oh, this is Carla, and her daddy's in heaven with Jesus. Just is about to turn 70, has had a rotten last 5 years. And he made a comment that I've often heard before. He said, well, my father died at 71. My brother made it to 72. You know, you start thinking, when did your parents die? I see some of you nodding. I notice in my own married family, like both of my parents died really quite young. And so I immediately think, as soon as I get to 62 or 70, and my husband, they're both alive and kicking at 86 and 91. So without even thinking about it, you start comparing yourself to perhaps the life cycle of others. So bodies, and I'll say a little bit more theologically about bodies in a minute, but part of the theme that we're rolling toward in this class today is thinking about our bodies as the temple of the Holy Spirit, which is a way of saying that our bodies are not something which we fight against or try to transcend or get above in order to find communion with God, but that our bodies themselves, throughout the life cycle, are a gift of God and themselves a medium for spirituality. Maybe some of you were raised or have learned to understand it, if you agree with that. Most of us raised in the church, certainly in my generation, do you remember the expression, the world, the flesh, and?
The devil.
Yes. So what was bodies associated with for those raised in many church settings, and culturally it's not much different. What is body associated with?
Sin,
flesh. What is, what, tell me your associations with flesh.
Weakness.
Weakness, great. Mm. Weakness.
Temptation.
Thank you. So temptation is something leading us away from God. What else? Associations.
Unruly appetites.
Oh, unruly appetites, straight out of the Book of Common Prayer. Yes. Yes, unruly appetites, leading to temptation and to sin. Yes, others?
Flesh pots.
Flesh pots, thank you. We can imagine what that means. So flesh, temptation, sexual and others. Other associations or stories any of you have, your association with body growing up, especially if you were raised in religious settings.
Shame around it.
Shame, thank you. Shame. Shame.
Deterioration.
Don't.
Deterioration, yes.
Don't.
Don't, great, right. Don't. So, what would the opposite of some of those be? Some of those associations with the flesh. Is pleasure a bad word?
Shouldn't be.
Well, beauty.
Beauty, yes.
Strength.
Beauty, strength,
magnificence.
Comfort, magnificence,
tenderness.
Mm-hmm. Wonderful. Tenderness. And what about the body as a vehicle toward communion with God? What might that look like?
Orgasm.
Orgasm. So deep pleasure of a transcendent nature.
Meditation.
Yes, we do meditation in our bodies. We work on our breath. We still ourselves. We may do gestures that help us to ground ourselves. I heard a great expression the other day about just life, which was strong at the center and softer at the edges. So we're going to talk a lot about that in a minute, but that gets us going. I want to say a few things, especially about women. So men, you can be aware, and some of you, if you have suffered sexual abuse, you will identify with this. But even women who have not suffered sexual abuse or domestic violence, there is in our culture centuries and centuries of both idealizing on the one hand and loathing and fear of women's bodies. And so for many women, body is not a neutral topic. It is a topic associated with shame, with sometimes self-loathing, with a sense of inadequacy, or a sense of fear. We know something about being prey animals. And so the body has connotations for women that I didn't want to ignore. And I want to quote something from, this is another Roman Catholic writer, Kathleen Fisher, teaches at Seattle University, a Jesuit college in Seattle. Now, this is an exercise that anyone can do, male or female, but I find very beautiful. Someone talked about tenderness. Psalm 139, one of my favorite lines, "Thou hast searched me and known me, thou knowest my innermost parts." You know, there is an example of the tender look that God looks at as God looks at any one of us, including our bodies. God doesn't just look with tenderness at a three-month-old or a beautiful 20-year-old. God is looking with that tenderness and delight, perhaps pleasure, in the beauty of who we are at all times and at all ages. And here's this wonderful story about a woman. Kathleen writes, hearts. We turn from controlling the flesh to blessing our bodies for all that we have learned and can do because of them. A woman develops such a prayer for herself, and I quote, "I cover myself with gratitude using a fragrant lotion. I start my praise by lighting my rose candle to Our Lady of Guadalupe. My body prayer begins with my feet and moves upward. Smoothing the lotion on, I silently say thank you to each part of my body for what it brings me and has brought me. I say thank you, feet, for carrying me so faithfully, for supporting me wherever I go." Isn't that beautiful? Some of us may have experienced the delight and the comfort of having a loved one, a partner, massage us, or going to a wonderful massage therapist. And the experience of being tenderly touched is such a wonderful one. But if you have a chance, if you haven't already, to do that for yourself, to touch yourself with tenderness and gratitude. Thank you, wrists. I'm sort of obsessed with wrists this week because of someone in the room back there, our Tai Chi teacher. Maybe even a part of you that has been injured but is healing. Can you speak tenderly and touch tenderly to that part of your body as a way of honoring yourself, in a sense, putting yourself in the place of Christ, and touching, so that we don't reinforce the lesson that somehow we have to get that tenderness from somebody else. Can we begin to give that tenderness to ourselves? So I love that little exercise. One more little story in that regard. In my last parish, a man was dying, and I had the privilege of visiting with him. And his daughter, now a young priest, I knew when she was very young and just started seminary. And she and her two sisters and her mom were all there present for her dad's dying and for his death. And I had been there about half an hour before he died, and then I was in the same building in a retirement community and came back about 3 hours after he died. And so I asked the family, I had prayed with him and anointed him and whatnot. And I came back and I said, "Well, how was it? How was it?" And all three of them teared up and said, "It was wonderful." And I said, "Well, tell me more about that." And so the mom said, "Well, Jenny," that's the young priest, "Jenny brought us all over the bed. And she had some oil. And she anointed his body. And she anointed his eyes. And thanked God for all that he had seen in his life. And she anointed his ears and praised God." He was a lover of music. And named some of the composers that he loved. "And she anointed his hands. And we all remembered his love of us and of hugging and kissing and his love of plants and of green things." You get the idea. What a wonderful thing for a family to do. Touch their loved one and to honor the senses, the five senses, a way that God comes to us, a way that God doesn't come to angels. God comes to us through the gift of our senses, sight, touch, smell, the gift of our bodies. So the gift of our finitude, a few more words, and then I have a wonderful guest that I want to introduce. So gifts and opportunities of our finitude and our physicalness. So yesterday we talked a lot about gratitude. I would suggest that the sense of perspective and proportion that comes this time of life. How many of you have had a test come back initially positive and then found out it was no problem? How do you feel after that?
Like the weight has been lifted.
Woo! Happy am I to drink this cup of coffee and take a walk this morning. I'm not dying. You know, right away, there's a sense of proportionality of, boy, I was so pissed off. How quickly does that go out the door when you wonder you're dying, right? So the gift of finitude, that gives us a sense of the proportionality of the stuff that's bugging us, which often is pretty trivial, at least it is for me. Learning to enjoy things that we can't do anymore, but people we love do. How many of you know Jim Gamrath? One of the great Holden people. Just love that family. I remember about 10 years ago, I was coming back from a I was on my way to Heart Lake, and he said, "Have fun for me." And I didn't really know what he meant. I didn't know that he'd been really quite a hiker in his years. I'd just known him in his later years. So can we begin as we get older to rejoice in the fact that, well, I can't go to Cloudy Pass maybe anymore, but my son's going to go, and I'm going to hear about it. No, that's wonderful. So learning to enjoy when others can do things we can. Intentionality. We've been talking about this all week. Where are my energies are going to go in the years that I have left to me? So here's another one. I've learned so much in my life and my work in the church. And here's another one. I think that my observation of myself, but of people moving along the life cycle, is that in some ways, and this is a paradox, even as our senses are in some ways getting weaker, our sight's not so good, our hearing may not so good, in another way, they're getting sharper. And so here's another story. A member of three parishes ago, a women's group I was in, and the woman who was hosting it, I'll call her Linda. As we were getting ready for the other women to get there, it was October, and she said, "I've never seen the leaves so beautiful. I've never seen such a beautiful fall." Do you know what I'm getting at? As you get older, you've never seen such a beautiful sunset, have you, than the one you just saw? Does our appreciation, does our gratitude for God just get deeper? And it's as if the very colors are brighter than they've ever been. Is that literally true, or is it true on an energy level? What a gift that is. We see a sunset and we just want to cry. Is that a gift of growing older? So here's a poem by a woman named Marilyn Zuckerman. "I will age like this tree. I will age like this tree. Every change a color. Each move into the interior flagged. I will bring light to all parts, ignite thought, quicken spirit until it shines. And at last, when all is incandescent, I'll go in glory." Isn't that beautiful? You know what she's talking about, don't you? You know what she's talking about. So the central paradox of aging, that as we get moved further along, our interior awareness can become richer, while our physical abilities can slow or decline. And that, cultivating that ability is something I would suggest we do in midlife. Cultivating that appreciation, that alertness, that awareness, that almost erotic desire to enjoy the senses of the body and to treasure every bit. So, moving along, into the mystery a little bit more. The privilege of being with someone who's dying. How many of you have been with someone who's dying? Tell me a gift that was to you. Somebody who hasn't said anything yet that raised their hand. Somebody.
One thing I realized was, you think, oh, it's joyful to be with someone when they're having a baby, when there's a new baby born. And I felt the same way when I was with my father when he passed away. I realized at that point that it was a birth from this physical world into the back to the world of spirit, back to being with God. Mm-hmm. And I realized it was a very great privilege to be able to be with him at that point. Mm-hmm. And just experience that rebirth back to God.
Goosebumps, thank you. Anyone else? Please.
I was mostly amazed by the sense of peace, because it was so uncomfortable to know how wonderful that person was when they were living, and now we're lying with just a few probably days or months left. And yet there was peace in that person, and I felt the peace.
Peace that passes understanding. Beautiful. Thank you. Anyone else?
The friend that I'm here with. When her mom was dying, she was actually up here when her mom had a stroke, and I was with her mom at that point back in Chicago, and so she had to be pulled away from Holden, unfortunately. And it took her mom about 10 days to die, but we watched the process. In the last day or so, we actually watched the life kind of ebb out of her feet, and out of her body. We could just watch it moving up, and we were singing hymns to her and telling stories, and her husband was sitting and playing harmonica. And I still, if I had to say it, I think that's one of the most profound experiences of my life. It was beautiful. So.
Thank you. Thank you. Yes.
But not all deaths are like that.
Mm-hmm. Tell us about that.
Because when my husband died, I did not want him to die. I did CPR on him long after I knew he was gone, because I did not want him to go. And he didn't want to go, but we couldn't do anything about it.
Makes it hard when the person doesn't want to go. Did you have someone to support you during that process?
Not right then.
I wish you had.
911, you know.
Anyone else? Yes.
I had an unusual experience of a moment of hilarity at my cousin's death. My cousin had been dying of cancer, and my brother and I were taking turns keeping vigil. And my cousin had a very dry sense of humor. The night before he died had been a difficult one for him, and restless, and my brother had been with him and had given him medication for pain. And when I came in the morning, I sat next to him, and he appeared to be sleeping, and I kind of poked him a little bit. I said, "Steve, are you sleeping?" And at least a whole minute went by, and without moving a muscle, he said, "Well, I was." Those were the last words he spoke, and 5 hours later he was gone.
Oh my goodness.
And he had been playing classical music on the radio. That's what he enjoyed. And at the moment when the funeral home people came to take his body away, Ave Maria happened to come on the radio.
Well, my father died last summer about 12 hours before his 99th birthday.
Oh.
So,
what was so special? It's such gratitude.
Special.
And he had so much gratitude.
Mm.
He would, you know, he looked up and he just kept saying, "Thank you.
Mm.
Thank you. Thank you." Big smile on his face.
Mm.
And I thought, you know, he would say goodbye to my sister Judy and my sister Debbie and me. But who did he focus on? Our sister with Down syndrome.
Mm.
She was a blessing in his life.
She was a blessing in his life. Thank you. One more.
Sir. This is all very nice and consoling to some of us, but there are, in my experience of life, many very bad deaths.
Yeah.
I happened to be in Vietnam.
Yeah.
I had to hold some people's hands and tried to plug some holes.
Mm.
Seen some hideous car wrecks of young people, old people, and I think we have to work within ourselves and with God, trying to make sure that those we love and ourselves don't, I mean, not the way of death, but end up with a bad death. It's hard on other people. It's, you know, it's pretty much over for that person that died. But how they die, I think, is so important.
Right.
Or how we die.
Right.
Or how you die. It's a big event.
A big
event.
Yeah. Thank you for that. Thank you for that. And many of the stories we've told, sort of a self-selecting group, we are people of faith, and many of our parents were as well. And so some of these things happen with the context, within the context of people who have been, to the best of our abilities, practicing our faith. And we're in settings where there's time and clean sheets and gifts to give, and you're reminding us of how many deaths take place in loneliness, in violence, in filth,
starvation.
In starvation, in fear, in terror, or where people could really benefit from any one of you in this room sitting there and holding the hand of the person dying. Any one of you could do that. And maybe you will do that, for not just someone in your own family. But I trust and hope that, know that you will be available if in a circumstance where there's an accident. Well, you just pull up, you pull up, and you don't have to be a pastor to do that. You are a pastor. You go do that and offer that to a family that's afraid. And part of what we're hearing in these stories, where there is the opportunity for stillness and love and tenderness and basic safety and comfort, is that it's so clear that a person is not just their body. It's so clear. And sometimes I've had the sense that the spirit is too big for the body at a certain point. Have you ever had that sense where it just blows, the body can't hold that much life anymore? There's too much energy, too much vitality, and we're dust, and the dust wears out. And so the gift for those of you who've had the privilege to be there is you sort of see what, oh, this is what Jesus meant by eternal life. It isn't just out in the beyond. It's already in our bodies. It's already a reality right here. It's not somewhere down there. This vitality, this in-Godness, without which nothing is made, without God, it's all, it's there. And it can no longer be contained within the cells. So this notion of eternal life is not something that's far away, but how many of you really get us to kick out these doors? Right in the middle of nowhere here, you know?
Oh, yeah.
It's like the last scene in the last battle in C.S. Lewis' Narnia book, where you just walk through the door and you're in the new creation. I got to picture that sense that the body is a door. So again, what we're talking about and getting at is this sense of the bodies that we have as a gift throughout the life cycle, that even death itself, by the grace of God, can be an opportunity to see that that who we are has an energy and a vitality and a beauty beyond this life. So when Sophia asks me where your daddy is, in faith I say, he's at home with Jesus. And so I've invited someone here today that I've been chatting with, named Shannon Smith, who agreed at breakfast. She had a really big breakfast, so maybe she wasn't thinking that. But when I asked her, when I found out that in addition to many other professions, that she's also a Reiki master who works with energy, I asked her to say a few things to us this morning about energy. How many of you have been doing Tai Chi this week? A lot of you.
Once.
That's all. That's you've walked through the door. You're never going back now. You've walked through that door. You've experienced. How many of you practice yoga? A few of you. Any other sort of body meditation practices that any of you have had? Anything else? Sure. You, sir.
Self-hypnosis.
Self-hypnosis.
It's very relaxing. I don't know too much about yoga.
Okay.
Physical therapy, heart, shoulders.
Physical therapy. Yeah, well, we know about that part. I'm glad to hear that.
But it is.
Is there
a benefit besides just the physical?
Tell us more about that. What's the benefit that you've received?
You see your progress. You see very helping people that really concerned about your health and your mental state and those kind of things. I think it's a form of all these other,
sure.
It's a healing.
It's healing.
someone helping you learn how to claim your body back. Great.
Yeah, I think that's good.
Wonderful. Good. Well, I've asked Shannon to say just about 5 minutes worth, which is not much time, but it gives us a start about Reiki and about energy as a way to educate us all. So, Shannon's next.
Carla started off the week with her classes teaching us about awakening. That was your first class, was about awakening to new possibilities and new awarenesses about what we really are and what we are becoming. And understanding about our energy body and our ourselves as a being of energy has been that way for me over the last 10 years. And I've been studying different ways of energy healing, and just the fact that we have an energy body was a new concept for me 10 years ago. I wasn't even aware of it. And so along with our physical bodies, we have an energy body that is integrally intertwined with all parts of our health. It's intertwined with our self on the emotional level, on our thoughts, our mental level, and with the physical level as well, and also on the spiritual level. And the energy body is partly within us, and it's partly without, on the outside. And many of you have probably heard about or seen people talk about auras. Mm-hmm. That's part of our energy body that's outside our body, and that extends from close to our body and right next to our body and extends outward, you know, up to, you know, a couple feet away. And one way that you energy body is often depicted in artistic means is when you see Jesus and the saints and Mother Mary with a halo around their head. That's a depiction of the energy center at the top of our head that is it's part of being connected to spirit, to God. And because those people were so strongly connected to God, that sense of energy around the top of their crown, that top of their head, is more visible to more people. And it's also a way to show that they have that holiness because the crown chakra is enlarged and live, and it's, you know, more full of life. And the energy body is also inside our body, and you hear that when you talk, you know, about acupuncture, and acupuncturists use the needles and also pressure points to access the energy body that's part of our inside our body. And there's lines that some of you have probably seen pictures of acupuncture meridians and energy lines, and that there's lines that run through your arms and your legs and your torso and your head. And then there's, in those pictures, you'll see little dots all over. And those are the meridian points that acupuncturists use when they use the needles to break up blockages in the energy body that's within the body. And the work that Terrell's been showing us all week with the Tai Chi is a way of accessing that energy body that's within us and using it as a sense of being able to lift and move that body and that sense of who we are. Besides just our physical body, there's the energy body that moves. Well, the energy body doesn't just hang out and just doesn't sit there and do nothing and walk around with us wherever we go. It's got a flow to it. If your energy is unencumbered or not blocked, energy is kind of moving through your body. It has circulation patterns. It runs, you know, comes in from the universal and divine energy that's coming at us all the time as part of our nourishment. That's how our spirit, in some ways, is kept alive. I certainly don't understand that completely, but that energy is part of keeping us alive. And then when we do pass on, that leaves the body, you know, and the body returns to dust, but our spirit is still being nourished and nurtured by energy that comes from God and from the universal life force energy. And so the energy needs to be moving. I mean, if it's moving in a healthy way, it's always circulating and moving, and you're always being nourished from spirit. And so our old emotions and things that we need that we can let go of, and we talked about, Carla talked about that yesterday, forgiveness and gratitude. If there's things that you're hanging on to that are old grudges or old fears or old things you're angry about, those things, or judgment, even judgments against yourself or against other people, those things are stuck in your energy body. Those are thought, and part of it's a thought, but there's also the emotional aspect of it. So it's emotions and thoughts that are stuck in your energy body. And so part of what energy healing does then is to help remove some of that. Because when you can release those old things that are stuck, then you're not, it's not like you're carrying this bag along with, you know, everywhere you go. So that's part of the purpose. And one just quick little exercise I'd like to leave you with, because I know my already passed
okay.
my 5 minutes.
Good.
is a way of using energy to connect to spirit.
I'm going to interrupt. That sounds too important to do in 2 minutes. Why don't we invite anyone who wants to stay for this at the end to
okay.
do that, because I don't want to rush that.
All right.
And I want to be a part of it.
Okay.
So. I think we should thank her. In the churches that I've served over the last 27 years, easily a third to a half of the people in them are involved in acupuncture, Tai Chi, yoga, some kind of spiritual growth that uses the body as a medium of communion with God and as a medium for healing. How many of you taking Tai Chi for the first time really felt that you were given a really big gift this week? And that Carol, you're a marvelous teacher. And there is, from my perspective, no conflict with Christianity of many of these modalities. These are all ways, I think, of gifts of God working in our time to grow us in our relationship with God, in our own healing, for the healing of the world. And so I'll close this part so we can get to the other fun part. Again, from Kathleen Fisher, a Chippewyan Arctic guide on the whole question of life eternal. A Chippewyan Arctic guide named Saltatha said, "You have told me heaven is very beautiful. Now tell me one more thing. Is it more beautiful than the country of the musk oxen in the summer, when sometimes the mist blows over the lakes and sometimes the water is blue? And the loons cry very often. This is beautiful. If heaven is still more beautiful, I will be glad. I will be content to rest there until I am very old." Isn't that beautiful? That sense, and C.S. Lewis writes a lot about this, that if we are not, in fact, experiencing fullness of life here, there's no heaven that's going to bring it to us. If we are not learning the heavenly gifts of being alive on this side, there's no way that it can be given us there. The flip side of that is the more that we live in gratitude, forgiveness, finding all the tools we can to help us let go of some of the bitterness and the rage and the hurt and the violation that we've done or have done to us, any help that we can have to live with gratitude and joy, we will know God when we see God. So let's move a little bit on. One of the things that Shannon reminded me of this morning, which is that our stuff in wrong relation to us actually take energy from us. Has that ever happened to you? It may seem like an abrupt segue, but I'm talking about moving from the household of our bodies to the rooms we live in, the stuff we have. How many people have had to clean out your parents' houses?
No.
Mm-hmm. What's that like?
Ah!
Why is it so hard?
It's just an accumulation of a lifetime. And, well, for instance, my mom had just 3 large boxes just of photographs. And my brother said, "Chuck them." And I said,
"Okay." So if you were to come to my house and say, and there are actually people you can hire to do this.
Yes.
You'd say, that person would say, "You know, why don't you take about 10 of each of these?"
Yeah. Oh, no.
But I don't have any energetic connection to that, do I? I don't have any energetic connection. I started a poem that I never finished, that I started to write on a week where I lost two things I could, that were really treasures to me. And one was a stole I'd been given after a parish I'd served for 10 years, handmade silk. I don't know where it is. And I was just starting a new congregation, and I was really looking forward to wearing something that sort of brought the history and the energy and from another place, and I couldn't find it. Cried and cried and cried. Something else I lost that week, and I finally, and I was going nuts. I was tearing things apart, you know. I was a joy to live with. My husband's just shaking his head. This is not the first time that happened. So I wanted to write a poem entitled Too Much Treasure. I have too much treasure. Many of us with families and those of us who've worked in jobs that have been meaningful, I have a whole room, I have a whole bookshelf full of really meaningful things. This can be hard. What am I going to do with all these meaningful things? Too much treasure. So what, share with me anything, what kind of energy does it take from you to have too much treasure? So again, I don't mean just too many things, but too many things with too much power over you. Have you ever had that experience? Yeah. Sir?
I don't know if it applies, but when my wife was ill and we moved into a retirement home or complex, they gave us a big month's free rent if we got out of the place, if we moved in within a month or so. So we sold the house in 2 weeks. We got rid of all the furniture. We had two daughters there that helped divide everything, and we put labels on everything, and we divided the furniture five ways, ourselves and each child. Mm-hmm. And we just made quick decisions, and it was done. Mm-hmm. Now, of course, I can think of a few things we should have maybe saved, but they're all still around because the kids have most of them. And my wife saved a lot of albums. We had about 21 albums of pictures. We figured, well, rather than split them, we just gave them all to one daughter. So the kids will have to visit her if they want to see. But anyhow, it was done, and I think it was done well because we didn't really waste anything important. Mm-hmm. Everything important has a home. Mm-hmm. The stuff that wasn't, we just donated.
It sounds like you did a good job.
Yeah,
I bet it was a lot of work.
We moved in and got the month's free rent.
How did it feel to get rid of both the things nobody wanted, and how did it feel to get rid of some of the things that your kids wanted? How did that feel to you and your wife?
Well, obviously, there were things that my wife probably would have liked to keep, but the daughters got it, or our son got it. They were still half ours, you know. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Wonderful story.
And one thing we did that I think worked well, about a month before she died, she wanted to see each one of them. They're all over the country. Mm. So we flew each one in for a separate visit for a few days or a week, whatever it was. And it was very meaningful to everyone. Mm. And I think she was real happy with that. Yeah.
Thanks be to God.
Yeah.
Anyone else? Your stuff. What have you learned? Carol.
Eric Hoffer, the American philosopher, said, you can never get enough of what you don't want. But I prefer Lutheran pastor John Magnuson's misquote. He's also a Tai Chi practitioner. And that is, you can never get enough of what you don't need. And you think of the amount of energy spent pursuing what you don't really need.
Thank you. I had a friend who, I had, true confessions here, I'd been in a bad mood about something, and I went to the shopping mall to pick up something I didn't need, and I got so depressed just walking around the mall, and I was telling a friend about it, and I said, everybody looked miserable, and she said, people wandering around looking for something to want.
That's about right.
Wandering around looking for something to want. A lot in that statement. Huh? Did someone else have their... Yes, sir.
I think the disease is inheritable. I would explain more, but my wife is next to me. But how big a ball of string can you use? You know, how many? many magazines from 19...
I got one from 1974. I still use every day.
And how much defense can your wife make?
Right.
And will she kill me?
Well,
a major threat.
There are psychological diseases called, what's the expression? Hoarding. And exactly. And someone a long time ago, about 20 years ago, made a lot of money investing in those big box storage places. What are they called? Store your stuff?
Yeah.
So, okay, let's shift. We've got just a few minutes. What is the remedy? What's the medicine? And any experience with that?
I haven't, because I'm a collector, but be ruthless.
Be ruthless.
Absolutely ruthless.
Right. Get rid of stuff. And when's a good time of life to do that?
Right now.
Right now.
Before you have to.
Oh, yes.
Yeah. You don't want your children doing this.
And the strength.
And thank you very much. There she just said the whole point of the last 15 minutes. Do it while you have the energy and the strength. Do it as this family did. This was just an amazing story.
Yeah.
With tenderness and the involvement of your children, and make it a gifting, and then get rid of it. Anyone else? What's the remedy? Yes.
I had two good friends who, for my 50th birthday, gifted me with an afternoon of their time to go through our garage and purge everything that we didn't need. And they're totally, they don't have any investment in any of this. And so they just made piles of things, and each pile went to some place, like the recycling or to Goodwill or to wherever. And that was a real gift.
My spiritual director, when I told her this story and how sorry I was feeling for myself, she said that in the United Methodist tradition, that when someone is ordained, and ordained for the first time, that an elder pastor gives them their stole. Mm-hmm. And I thought, well, energetically, I've given my stole back to the universe somehow. Can you find ways to find meaningful places, in some cases, to give away your things to that young person or to that relative or to that person you may not even like but you think might enjoy it? Anyone else? What's the remedy to this? Yes?
Well, I'm in a little younger generation, but I helped some of my grandparents and my parents do the purging. And I think it helps to have somebody to help you that's not emotionally attached.
Right.
But I also think helping my grandmother, who's 97 now, they didn't throw things away in her generation. My generation is a much more, let's just throw it away because I have used it last year and I'm just going to throw it away.
Excellent.
We're more easily to do that. Now, their generation, it was very hard for her every time we purged.
And they also didn't buy.
No, and so what they had, she got $20 a week, and what she bought was precious.
Excellent.
And she's, so it's harder, when we're working with our grandparents and parents to purge. It's going to be easier for me and my children because they're easily purging. They can throw things really easily.
Excellent story. Mm-hmm. Anyone else? Yes.
I can say almost that too. With my mom, we found it's sometimes more important to take something than to have it. Because she wants to know somebody has it.
Yeah.
And that's it.
Right. So reassuring that person.
So I have
that
a whole garage full of stuff that once she's gone, it's getting thrown out.
We won't tell her. But when All Saints Day comes, we better be telling her. Yes.
I thought that when I'm hanging on to stuff, to just ask myself, what am I afraid of? What, if I don't have this, what will be missing? And oftentimes, it's the things that I don't want to give away are those projects that I'm proud of. It's like, well, I'll be able to do good things again. And so there's the releasing that fear and both trusting oneself and God and the universe that I will have what I need and I'll be able to create things.
I think this is a wonderful benediction, what we just heard to the whole day. That sense that I have everything I need. I have everything I need. It's all here. I have everything I need because of the grace of God. I have everything I need because God is in me. I have everything that I need, that even though this body may lay in dust, I am united with Christ, and Christ is in me. And I don't have to be afraid. So to what degree are our things holding us because we are afraid? And how can we, through all the sort of implication all week, is what is the wisdom trellis? What is the that thing which we are choosing to guide our growth through these years that sets us free? Free to love, free for joy, and free to serve others. So thank you all very much.